This week, new number one receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs, Jeremy Maclin, tweeted, "My dog just acted out in Petco. Took three major dumps while we were in there." And I thought about it, and you know, Jeremy Maclin's dog caught as many touchdowns as any wide receiver on the Chiefs last year. I'm not going to necessarily say that, you know, that the Chiefs should sign Jeremy Maclin's dog. Maybe just bring him into camp. Welcome to Rough the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This episode, I'm going to look around the internet and pick out all of these things that have come up the last week about the Chiefs, all these debates, these questions about the Chiefs running back, wide receiver, tight end combo, where that fits in the NFL. A really interesting 90%, 50%, 10% exercise for things that have that percentage of a chance of happening in this next season for the Chiefs. Great idea. Talk more about that in a little bit. Talk about the third best player on the roster after Jamaal Charles and Justin Houston. Who's next? Take a note of a statistic that's usually a very bad thing. I'm going to argue it's actually a good thing for the Chiefs in this case. Then we'll look at Evan Mathis and where he may end up. Some speculation there, not only for the Chiefs, but for another team that matters very much to this franchise and to the Chiefs fan base. Look at some other big NFL news and more of those little debates and questions. There's plenty to dive into. There's going to be a whole lot of my opinion. Let's start out with this 90-50-10 idea. Now, this came from a fan post over on Arrowhead Pride. Direction, spelled phonetically, is the name of the user who came up with it. And he says, the game essentially goes, name something about the upcoming Chiefs season you think is 90% likely to happen. Then something that you think has a 50% chance of happening. Then a 10% chance of happening. And explain why. I love that idea. So I'm going to kick off this episode with mine, and then here in the comments on Arrowhead Addict, or you can tweet me at JB Briscoe, any questions all week long, any ideas all week long, and now these 90-50-10s, I would love to get a good discussion going on what you think is 90, 15, 10% likely to happen this Chiefs season. I'll link to the Arrowhead Pride article where this happened originally, because they did some of their own over there too. But I just love this idea, so I'm going to give them credit and now just take it and run with it, because I think it's a great setup. So let's start with the 90% things I think have a chance to happen. I think there's a 90% chance that this offensive line is generally noted as passable throughout the entire season. Not dominant, not tragic. I think it's a good chance that it's improved from last season, but still exploitable. Because even when you consider that a guy like Mitch Morse might not start and then could essentially play anywhere, in either an injury situation or if someone just underperforms, and I love that about him, you're still using a rookie to plug in to fill that hole. So that's still exploitable. I think Fisher has a nice year. I like Grubbs, though his career's already peaked, essentially. Cush or Morse will probably be good, but not great, at least for this season. I've been a Zach Fulton believer since he was drafted. I continue to beat his drum. I hope he starts. That might be Jeff Allen over on that side. We don't know. And the right tackle's pretty scary. You know, Donald Stevenson has some raw physical talent, but him not playing at all last year was really scary as to what this team thinks of his talents. I think it'll be better. I think there's a 90% chance that it's better than last year by a nice step forward, and that it's still not dominant. I don't think we'll look at Jamaal Charles and go, oh, this is, if he had even an average offensive line, he'd be taking over the world. I think you will have an average offensive line. I think that's what it's going to be. And the other thing I think there's a 90% chance happens is I think we universally agree that, quote, Andy Reid cost this team a game at least one time this year, at least once. And for me, it might be more than that. I made a habit of it last year of looking at Andy Reid's play calling, some interesting coaching decisions, whatever you may remember from last year. I am not the first one to give Andy Reid a pass. You know, he's in the conversation of top coaches in the NFL, and I think rightfully so, and I'm very glad he's the head coach of the Chiefs, and the Chiefs aren't trying to comb through coordinators again to find the next Todd Haley. But I think there's a 98% chance, honestly, but certainly a 90% chance that we all at some point this year can basically all agree that Andy Reid essentially cost the Chiefs a game. Now, some of you may be able to dial it down to say Andy Reid made a bad decision and the Chiefs couldn't come back from it, or any number of things that you could sort of dial it down by. But I'm sure that I will say at some point at least Andy Reid cost his team a game. Now let's go to the 50% chances. Two things that I think have a 50% chance of happening, one good, one bad. I think there's a 50% chance that Jeremy Maclin and Jamaal Charles will combine to miss at least four games due to injury. with their injury track records, they have to be very prepared at least to operate without them for games here and there. Hopefully nothing catastrophic. I hope it's 4 and not 16. But so since the Chiefs played, or since Charles played just those two games in 2011 with his knee injury, he's played in 16, 15, and 15 games in those seasons afterwards. And then he was, of course, hurt in the 2013 playoff game against the Colts. But you have to really understand the fear that I have for Charles. You have to remember all of these instances over the last 3 years or so when we've watched him hobble off the field. You know, he rolls an ankle, he gets bent over backwards, his knee goes in a scary direction. All those times when he jogs off the field limping, and we all go, well, I'll hold our breath and say, well, maybe this is it. At the very least, he's not coming back for this game. Hopefully he's not out for long. And then he comes back for the next series. It's incredible, honestly. But I don't think that's a clip that we can or should expect Charles to keep up. I'm going to talk about Niall Davis in a little while and what he said. But right now, it seems like the Chiefs basically are saying, hey, Charles is getting the ball, or we're throwing it, or Niall Davis is getting the ball. Not a lot of other options for handing it off. So Charles needs to find a way to stay less banged up this year. I think there's a 50% chance that he and Macklin combined to miss 4 games. Now, Macklin, since 2011, Jeremy Macklin has played in 13, 15, 0, and 16 games. Now, Macklin, we've obviously all seen a whole lot less of Jeremy Macklin than we've seen of Jamal Charles. They've both dealt with those catastrophic injuries and a lot of little small bang-ups along the way. I hope they never catch up to them this year. I think there's a 50% chance that they do, at least on some level. And if you talk to Eagles fans or people who have watched Jeremy Macklin closely, I think you hear a lot of reports of the same sort of fears and little tweaks that we've seen with Charles kind of applying to Macklin. So I think there's a good chance that they combine to miss a handful of games. I also think there's a 50% chance the Chiefs have a top 10 defense. Now, as strange as this is to say, that seems to be on a pretty pessimistic side compared to a lot of other predictions that I've heard. But due to how we've seen injuries affect the defense, the likely 2-game suspension for Sean Smith at the beginning, expectations for the rookies, the concerns around Justin Houston and his contract, Dee Ford's a question mark, Tombaugh's getting older, you know, a few other factors there. I think there's a good chance that this defense is more in the 10 or 15 range, probably due to a slow start, I would say, because we know how the schedule pans out, and again, missing Sean Smith for those first two games. But I really do legitimately like how this defense shapes up. I just don't think top 10 is a 90% lock. I just think that's a really scary way to look at it. And then one other thing on a 50% chance, over from the original author of the fan post and Arrowhead Pride direction, I didn't read through any of these before I came up with mine. I didn't want to be influenced by him, but he has a great 50% one. He says he thinks there's a 50% chance we find this team's number two wide receiver of the future this season. Avant will likely start, but can Wilson and Mews be a constant threat? Can Conley show enough promise? I love that. I think there is a 50% chance that either Wilson or Conley really sort of step up and differentiate themselves from the rest of the group. I think there's also a chance that they both do that, and we can honestly say this receiving core is Macklin, Conley, and Wilson in whatever order for as long as they're here, and that would be fantastic. I don't know what percentage I would put that at, maybe 25, but I just wanted to give credit to that because I think that's a very good 50% chance thing to throw out there. And I got these two 10% possibilities. Again, one that would be very, very good, one that would be very, very bad. Let's go good news first here. Alex Smith, 10% chance. Alex Smith makes the Pro Bowl and leads a top 5 NFL offense. I'm going to say that one more time so everybody can sharpen their pitchforks. I think there's a 10% chance that Alex Smith is a Pro Bowl quarterback and that this offense is top 5 in the NFL. Jamal Charles, Jeremy Macklin, Travis Kelce, Albert Wilson, Chris Conley, and the offensive line. If those players and the offensive line takes the steps forward that we expect them to, if guys like Travis Kelce just progress like we would expect, if this offensive line is just a little above average, if any of them outplay our expectations, if Albert Wilson takes the next step, if Chris Conley gets a grip on the offense, if Macklin drops right in and becomes the number one receiver the Chiefs need so badly, if Jamal Charles stays healthy, this is a really, really lethal set of weapons. And I think Alex Smith would look very, very good while getting the ball to them. An interesting stat that Pro Football Focus tweeted out a few days ago. In 2014, Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith were tied for the highest percentage of passes dropped by their targets with 7.1%. That's not going to happen this year. Most of those guys who drop those passes aren't a part of the offense anymore. Now, obviously, Smith was thrown to Charles and Kelsey and Wilson in there. But a lot of those, a guy like Jeremy Maclin dropped the least number or the lowest percentage, I believe, of passes or of targets last season out of anyone in the NFL. That's going to go away. These guys catch the balls. They become accommodated to the system. Conley gets up to speed. The offensive line holds up together. If you play the season 10 times, I think one of the times this is a top 5 NFL offense. The other thing I think has a 10% chance of happening is that the entire rookie class essentially flops. Now this is the negative one, so hear me out. Let's say Marcus Peters is outplayed by Sean Smith and Phillip Gaines, which we talked about last week. You can go back to last week's episode and hear about how that might happen. Mitch Morse is held back by Grubbs and Cush and Fulton, which isn't all bad. Chris Conley isn't prepared for an Andy Reid offense yet. That's not a death sentence. That just seems like there's a good chance that happens. Maybe Steven Nelson isn't ready for NFL wide receiver speed. Maybe James O'Shaughnessy plays like a fifth-round rookie in an Andy Reid system. And then the pair of inside linebackers are basically irrelevant due to Derek Johnson and Josh Malga playing in the middle and playing well in the middle. I think in a lot of those cases, it's saying rookies are being outplayed by veterans, and that's not a terrible, terrible thing. Now, if Steven Nelson just can't keep up, or really if any of the players just can't keep up and just look bad, if any of them look like Nico Johnson, for example, that's very bad. I will not sugarcoat that on any level. But I think it's pretty reasonable to say that there's a 10% chance the entire rookie class just doesn't really add that much to this Chiefs team, just because of a lot of them being in positions where there are veterans who are in a place to outperform them. Again, I don't think this will happen. Like, I'm not predicting that the Chiefs have a top 5 NFL offense. But I think there's a chance that both of those things happen. A 10% chance, but a chance. Let's go ahead and jump over now to the biggest piece of news out of this last week of football. The Philadelphia Eagles released Pro Bowl offensive guard Evan Mathis. Pro Football Focus tweeted that Mathis was their top-graded offensive guard from 2011 through 2013, and was second last year in just 9 games. So the best offensive guard in the game is now available. Now, if this move would have happened towards the end of the regular season, this would be the biggest free agent target for the Chiefs after Jeremy Maclin, I believe. And after what they did for Ben Grubbs, the fifth-round pick, trading the fifth-round pick to the Saints for Ben Grubbs, we know something I was afraid of. We know that the Chiefs understood that they really needed to improve the interior of this offensive line. It was a big kind of front-page deal for this team, and they went out and did that. So they traded for Ben Grubbs. They signed Paul Faniaka to a multi-year deal. They have Jeff Allen. They have Zach Fulton. And those are all guys who essentially belong at the guard positions. And they drafted Mitch Morse, who if Eric Cush is going to play center, Mitch Morse is going to be fighting for a guard spot as well. Jeff Allen, you might say, could end up being a right tackle. We don't know that for sure, so let's throw it out there. I think Jeff Allen's probably best suited for guard. But back to Fulton, which I feel like I talk about Zach Fulton every single show now. I want to make sure everybody understands where I stand on him, because I think he did some incredible things last year. Because Fulton, if you wanted to go get Evan Mathis, if you said, look, let's make the offensive line Fisher, Grubbs, Cusher, Morse, Mathis, and then maybe Donald Stevenson at right tackle, I understand that completely. In a vacuum, I would take Evan Mathis over Grubbs, Faniaka, Allen, or Zach Fulton for next year. It's not even close. But the cap situation for the Chiefs, you all know, is pretty dire. They're playing around, I believe, less than $1 million in cap space currently. They got to extend Justin Houston. They need to be able to get another deal for Dontari Poe very soon. Sean Smith isn't going to be an issue until next year. But to bring in that sort of additional cap money is something the Chiefs probably can't afford to do, and I don't think they have the roster space to do it either. Cutting Faniaka would be inviting a cap hit, paying a guy who's not on the team. It'd be cap dead money. They brought him in for Moffitt to be a depth for a couple of years. That's what he's here for. That's what's going to happen. Ben Grubbs is here to stay. Jeff Allen is an interesting case. I could see him being a surprise cut, but then you go over look at from over the cap, the Chiefs, a good spreadsheet of the Chiefs' salary and everything. He's scheduled to make a little under, he's guaranteed to make a little under $1 million this year. So if he was cut before, actually, if he was cut after June 1st, there would be about $500,000 in dead money and about $1 million in cap savings. His cap number is about $1.5 million. So I guess it's a situation, I suppose, where they were to cut Jeff Allen. Now, the easiest guy to cut from that group, without question, is Zach Fulton. He would be about $500,000 in cap savings, and he would be just pennies of dead money because he's still on his rookie deal, obviously. He was a rookie last year, and he's a sixth-round pick. That's one of the easiest deals in the NFL to get out of. But if the Chiefs were to go after Mathis and then drop Zach Fulton, I'd be very disappointed. I would think that'd be the wrong decision. Now, I bring this up all the time. Chiefs fans talk about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif as this guy they want to see make the roster, at least the practice squad. Seems like a developmental kind of guy who maybe eventually could turn into a left or right tackle of the future. I get all that. Be optimistic about tackle prospects, offensive lineman prospects. I have no problem with that. In fact, I invite that. But with Zach Fulton, I feel like he gets kind of thrown under the bus and forgotten about a little bit. He was a sixth-round pick last year and then started and played 16 games. And he did it as a part of a really brutal offensive line. He was one of the bright spots of it. Now, you could certainly convince me that he's not going to be an all-pro right guard. I understand that. And being the bright spot of last year's offensive line isn't the largest compliment in the world, although he was playing beside Rodney Hudson, who obviously had a very good season and is now gone. But Fulton really held his own. And if you want to look at guys who could be developmental prospects, don't overlook the sixth-round pick who started 16 games last year as a developmental prospect. He got game experience immediately and played well throughout it and improved throughout the season tangibly. So I really don't want to underrate Zach Fulton because I think he could be a really nice piece of the Chiefs offensive line for a very long time. All that being said, then what happens with Evan Mathis? I think all of that basically says there's essentially no chance, or not that there's no chance, but that I would not, as looking at the cap and how the roster's currently constructed, I would not break the bank to go get Evan Mathis. One of the reasons he was reportedly cut from the Eagles was because he was trying to get a larger contract extension and an overall number. Chiefs can't afford to do that right now. If they're going to pay anybody, it needs to be Justin Houston. The offensive line, like I was saying earlier, I think is going to be pretty average, which is an improvement from last season. Adding Mathis would make it better. It would shore up the inside of that offensive line even more. But I just don't think that price is worth it. The Chiefs have already put too many resources into the guard position for this team right now. So then where does Evan Mathis go? Frankly, from my perspective, it only matters if he goes to one specific other place. And it's someone who needs him very badly. The Mile High Report, a Broncos blog, had a headline that just said, "The Broncos need to sign left guard Evan Mathis." And that's very true, honestly. Pro Football Focus ranked Mathis as their seventh best player in the entire NFL. Seventh best in the entire NFL, a few weeks back. Again, don't hear me say that I wouldn't take him over Zach Fulton or even Ben Grubbs. I would. It's not going to fit for the Chiefs, in my opinion. So here's what Mile High Report writes about the Broncos needing Evan Mathis. "The Broncos' offensive line is a huge question mark, and a Pro Bowl caliber player like Mathis would be a huge addition. We currently have career backup Ben Garland and journeyman Shelly Smith competing for the left guard spot. Mathis is a much better player than both of those guys. He fits the zone blocking scheme. He's quick, athletic, moves well on his feet, and has solid technique. Kubiak and the Broncos figured to run the ball a bit this season. He's an excellent run blocker. It would help their rookie left tackle, Ty Cimbrelio. He would help with double teams. Gives the rookie an experienced guy beside him." Adam Kaplan tweeted, "Knowing Mathis a bit, winning is important to him. He has a few good years left, so he could surface with a playoff-bound team. We'll see." The only issue here, and Mile High Report notes this, for the Broncos is the asking price. He was going to make a little over $6 million last year, or for this year. Contract issues with the Eagles. He's probably going to be looking for $7 or $8 million now. The Broncos do not have a ton of cap money to burn, but this makes a lot of sense for Denver, and for obvious reasons, I really don't hope it happens. I really hope it doesn't happen. I think the Chiefs can really exploit the Broncos' offensive line and head-to-head matchups, and then fight for the division overall. I think Mathis would really stop a lot of those problems for the Broncos. It'd make Dontari Poe's job a little harder for those two games of the year. And then again, obviously, throughout the entire season, as the Chiefs and Broncos try to fight for the division title. I'm not going to be heartbroken if Evan Mathis doesn't end up in Kansas City. I feel like I've made that very clear. However, I will be really concerned and pretty bummed out if he ends up in Denver. NFL.com had an article that I believe came out this morning, Sunday morning, from Adam Schein, who wrote about the most indispensable non-quarterbacks in the NFL. Top few: Adrian Peterson, Rob Gronkowski, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham Jr., Le'Veon Bell. And I was reading to see if Jamaal Charles showed up, because I believe he should. He did show up at number 6. He wrote, "Earlier this week, backup running back Niall Davis was asked about the difference between himself and Jamaal Charles. His response, quote, 'I don't feel like there's a gap.' With all due respect to Davis, who has shown fine promise and limited action, that's ludicrous. Over 7 pro seasons, Charles averaged 5.5 yards per carry. That's the second highest career average by running back in NFL history." And then he goes on to talk about how he's a good pass catcher, catching the ball out of the backfield, etc., etc., etc. He's right. Bottom line, this guy's everything for Andy Reid's offense. I'm an Alex Smith fan and supporter, but I'm not naive when it comes to his limitations. Charles, who somehow remains underrated, is the straw that stirs the drink for Kansas City." That's entirely true. I can't argue a word of that. I'm also an Alex Smith fan and supporter here. But if Charles disappears, this entire offense becomes very pass reliant. And while I do believe in the Chiefs' weapons they have for pass catchers from now on, This can be a very balanced offense if Andy Reid chooses to make it. And again, as Schein mentions, on a national level, and I even think to some extent on a local level, Charles does continue to be underrated, partially because he does have the second best career rushing average in the history of the NFL, and no one thinks of him that highly. But I think he legitimately does deserve that. And so let's use that as kind of a vehicle to jump into what Niall Davis said. The tweet was... The tweet summary was, "There's no gap in ability between him and Jamaal Charles." His actual quotes weren't as ludicrous if you read them all individually. Adam Teicher's article for ESPN.com says, "Even if he doesn't understand the reason, Davis gets the job belongs to Charles. I need to be available and stay healthy, and when Jamaal needs a blow, I'll go," Davis said. When he asked what he expected his role to be, "When it's my turn, I'll turn it on." That's good. If Niall Davis didn't understand that Jamaal Charles was the unquestioned king, he would be absolutely delusional. And then Teicher writes a little bit about the sort of Davis's idea and then all the differences. Let's just go ahead and go from the beginning a little bit. Teicher says, "Good for Davis for standing up for himself. It's a good sign he believes in his ability. In fairness to Davis, he's never had a chance to be a full-time back, as Charles has. Davis has had 3 games in his 2 seasons with the Chiefs, where he's been the featured back. Here's for 81 yards and 2 touchdowns and 27 carries in the final regular season game in 2013, when the Chiefs rested Charles and some other starters for the next week's playoff game. He replaced an injured Charles early in a Week 2 game last season in Denver, ran for 79 and 2 touchdowns on 22 carries, and then he had 32 rushes and 134 yards and a touchdown the following week in Miami, with 2 fumbles, though. And then Pro Football Focus also shows him allowing a sack and a quarterback hurry and pass protection from that game." Teicher then goes on to write about kind of the deficiencies in the passing game, etc., for Davis. One thing that I think is really overlooked pretty frequently, the difference between Niall Davis and Jamaal Charles, physically, I think you can say they're comparable. I would take Charles in essentially every category still. Fumbling, ball control, pass catching, general speed, running the ball. But I can understand how Davis could feel like he does have that ability. And a lot of Chiefs fans seem to be really interested in Davis's talent, because when they see when a hole opens up and Davis hits it, he usually makes that play happen. Now, here's the thing where I think a lot of people miss this on Niall Davis, and probably his biggest issue right now, and an issue that he could fix and it could become a strength as he becomes more of a veteran. It's his vision. Now, I can't remember who else I've heard talk about this. I feel like it was probably someone at 810 WHB. Niall Davis's vision is an issue here. Whenever the play is executed exactly like it's supposed to be, if he's going to split the left tackle and left guard, and it opens up exactly right, the fullback gets through, whatever, and he gets that gap exactly how it's supposed to be, he's going to make a good play. He's very talented. He's physically gifted. That's all easy to say. But whenever something goes wrong, or there was an instance from sometime in the last couple of years with Niall Davis where instead of hitting an open hole, he ran right into the back of his own offensive lineman because that's where the play was was designed to go. He didn't see the other hole open up or didn't have the confidence to try to bounce it over. He's going to have to develop that. And I think he can develop that vision, but until he does, he's not efficient in getting what is available. He's very talented and very efficient at getting to where he's supposed to be, and I believe in his talent on that level, but he's going to have to improve significantly on reading the offense, reading the defense, and hitting the holes where they open, not just necessarily where they're designed to be. Let's look at a few other articles about the Chiefs that have come out in the last week. There was one from CBSSports.com. So the Chiefs want quarterback Alex Smith to throw downfield more frequently. There are a few stats here that are really kind of jarring. One of them, Scott Kazmar of Football Outsiders tweeted, it's as if Alex Smith is playing a different sport. Average air minus needs yards differential since 2012. And Aaron Rodgers is a little over plus +3. And then all the way down the list, from Aaron Rodgers to Ben Roethlisberger to Jay Cutler to Colin Kaepernick, Nick Foles, Carson Palmer, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Tannehill, Robert Griffin, they're all in the positive, to where they will throw the ball in the air more than the distance that they need to pick up in that situation since 2014. It's kind of complicated of a stat, but I hope it makes sense. Alex Smith is at almost negative -2. So he if it's 3rd and 8, Alex Smith, based off of this, is prone to throw the ball 6 yards. Whereas if it's 3rd and 8, Aaron Rodgers is prone to throw it throw it 11 or 12. And that's not a tell-all stat, but it's something that whenever you compare that statistic to what we see on the field, that stat meets the eyeball test. That's something that sort of beefs up what we actually watch. He also tweeted, lowest average air yards on a drop pass in 2014. Alex Smith was at the bottom with 3.2. The next lowest was Mark Sanchez with 4.4. And then he said, Aaron Rodgers threw short of the sticks on 3rd down. This is a great stat. Aaron Rodgers threw short of the 1st down marker on 3rd down just about 24% of the time last season. Alex Smith threw short of the 1st down marker on 3rd down 58.3% of the time. And that is an enormous problem. Now, I think a lot of that can be chalked up to the offensive line and Smith not getting the time to actually figure out where the ball needs to go. And as things open up during the play. But if there's something that's going to ruin this team this year, at least the offense, it's going to be that kind of attitude from Alex Smith. Now, with better weapons and a better offensive line, I don't think that's going to kill this team. But if no matter what happens, honestly, no matter the reason, if it's based on the weapons, if it's based on Alex Smith, if it's based on the offensive line, this year the excuses aren't going to matter. And if he throws short of the 1st down marker on 3rd down, more than half of the time, that's going to be inexcusable. I mean, and you can say that maybe that's on a 3rd and 6, and he does a little check down to Charles because he thinks he can make up the ground. That's okay. In those cases, it can happen. That happened for Aaron Rodgers just under 25% of the time. But for almost 60% of the time, Alex Smith did that, and that's utterly unacceptable. That's showing an inability to complete plays, to make plays when you need to. So, I do believe the Chiefs are going to want Alex Smith to throw downfield more frequently and with greater accuracy, and now with a greater target. Chris Conley, Jeremy Maclin are going to be guys who can really stretch the field, and we expect to see more of that. But that stat about the 3rd downs, I thought was very interesting. Another interesting thing that happened, another stat at least for the Chiefs, the Chiefs have the highest rate of offensive turnover in the league. The Chiefs are returning just 57% of their offensive snap takers, which is lowest in the league. And that's not a good thing for the most part, or at least typically. If you're a really bad team, I suppose it is. If you're like the Buccaneers, maybe you don't want to have a bunch of the guys who won you 2 games return. But for a team like the Chiefs, who are sniffing the playoffs, that seems scary. And like the 49ers, this one article here points out, the 49ers are having a bunch of guys retire. That's a very bad thing. But for the Chiefs, turning 57% of their offensive snaps over, something I'm very okay with. When you look at the guys who went out and who they were replaced with, it's not all bad news. Jeremy Maclin is essentially in for Dwayne Bowe. Albert Wilson stepping up for Donnie Avery. Travis Kelce still around, but Anthony Fasano is gone. Hopefully more passes to Kelce. Ben Grubbs takes Mike McGlinn's spot. Eric Kush or Mike Morse will take over for Rodney Hudson. Zach Fulton is still starting, although right now you might pencil in Jeff Allen. This Arrowhead Pride article does. I disagree with that, but I love Zach Fulton. And then Ryan Harris is gone at right tackle, so maybe Donald Stevenson will be playing there. Regardless, however you put together that offense, that's a better offense and a better offensive line what the Chiefs put together last year. So turnover is scary, and I think fans need to consider that with this team, especially at the beginning of the season. I have high expectations for this offense can achieve. Same for the defense, but this offense has improved so much, in my opinion, since last year, that there's a lot to be hopeful for. But everyone's gonna be disappointed, I think, if our expectations get too high too quickly because of that amount of turnover. That's a big step for Alex Smith, for Andy Reid, for the entire team to sort of just reorient the direction of this offense. And even if the direction is the same, it's with new personnel. And with that drastic of a change, there are going to be hiccups along the way. Top over to another interesting debate that popped up in the internet for the Chiefs. Right here in Arrowhead Attic, Matt Verderam wrote about who is the Chiefs' third best player. Jamaal Charles and Justin Houston are a cut above. That's easy. And then he comes up with five names that could be considered for that third best spot. Jeremy Maclin, Travis Kelce, Alex Smith, Dontari Poe, and Sean Smith. Now, I'm just going to work backwards, I guess. Sean Smith had a year last year where he might have been the most important defensive player. And he took a huge step forward. Talked about him a bunch the last couple of episodes. You can go back to old episodes and listen to those if you want to hear more about Sean Smith. But it's one really good year, and I like him a lot. I don't think I could necessarily say, though, that he is the third best player on the Chiefs right now. Dontari Poe is an excellent consideration. You know, kind of makes me reminisce to the Haloti Ngata, the top of the Haloti Ngata era with the Baltimore Ravens, whenever people, and Vince Wilfork even, when people would say, this guy in the middle is going to change everything in this game. He eats up double teams constantly. You're not going to see him get sack numbers, but he's stopping the run up the middle, and he's eating up blockers during the pass rush. Without a guy like Dontari Poe in the middle, guys like Justin Houston, Tom Bahali would have to work harder. And also, especially for inside blitzes and everything, that entire defensive line looks better with Dontari Poe. I think there's a really excellent argument to be made for Dontari Poe, but again, he's running on a little bit of a short resume so far also. But one more year like we've seen from him, if he can stay up to speed, I think he'll be pretty much set in as that third best player in the future. I talk about Alex Smith all the time. I don't think he's the third best player on this team. I think he might be the most important one. If you went from Alex Smith down to Chase Daniel, that might be a bigger step than anywhere else on this team, although potentially Jamaal Charles and Nile Davis would be bigger, and maybe you could say Justin Houston down to D Ford. I'm fine with that. I would definitely be able to say that Alex Smith is the third most important player on this team for how it's constructed and how important quarterbacks are in the NFL, but I don't think he's the third best player. Travis Kelce, I'm very close to being ready to say, is the next best player, but he's not quite there yet. He has the potential. He might have more potential than anyone else on this team other than, you know, Justin Houston, Jamaal Charles. He could get to the highest heights out of anybody. But his fumbling problem and his one-year resume, as I've said now three times about three different players, holds him back, in my opinion, which is what makes this discussion so interesting. Travis Kelce could absolutely he could be one of the best Chiefs in history if the fumbling problem goes away and he continues to improve like we've seen him improve. But again, if you're saying third best player right now, I think the answer is a guy who hasn't played a single snap for the Chiefs. It's Jeremy Maclin. I think I said last week he's probably around the 15th best receiver in the NFL. If you're doing a draft, maybe you'd take him a little higher. And we've seen him perform with the Eagles. We've seen him perform with a bunch of different quarterbacks. He's getting paid a lot of money to be here for a reason. He's very important to this team because they need an outside threat like him. His resume is just a little longer than these other guys, than Kelce, than Poe, than Alex Smith, and Sean Smith. So I think I would probably say that the third best player on this team is Jeremy Maclin. It really puts that offseason signing in perspective. As a free agent, to bring in the third best player on your team makes that feel even a little bit bigger. But I think right now it's a question on for a good reason. It's debatable for sure, but I think at this point I would say the third best player on the team is Jeremy Maclin, just by a hair. A couple bits of real news here. The Chiefs had their first big injury from OTAs. Cornerback from Pitt State, a Kansas City native, Devontae Bosby, broke his collarbone. he should be back right around the beginning of training camp from what I've heard. But that's a really tough break, especially if you're on the fringe of the roster. I think he does have a chance to still have an impact on this team, a prime practice squad candidate. But we haven't even seen them in pads yet on an NFL roster. But an interesting report came out of about a player who I talked about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago and hasn't come back up until just this tweet. Josina Anderson tweeted that wide receiver James Jones told me his agent told him that the Seahawks, Giants, and Chiefs made preliminary inquiries after he was released post-draft in May. I still think that he makes a lot of sense for this Chiefs team. You line him up at that number 2 receiver spot I talked about last week. We don't really know who's going to fill that yet. Chris Conley's going to need some time. Albert Wilson's not a very prototype outside wide receiver. And then DeAnthony Thomas and Jason Avon are real slot guys. James Jones out on one end and Jeremy Macklin on the other with any of those guys in the slot and then coming into, you know, a guy like Wilson could scoot outside when he needs to. I like that buildup of a roster a whole lot. It's bringing another just down the field, stretch it out, explosive weapon to this offense, and you can never have too many of those. Also, Jones would probably be coming at a pretty reasonable price. At this point, I think we have a lot of high hopes for Albert Wilson and Chris Conley, and I'm on that bandwagon. I think they will be nice players in the NFL. But I also think that because of how miserable the receiving corps was last year, we as Chiefs fans are a little too lenient, possibly, on the depth that we have there. If you really look into it, again, those slot guys are really, I feel good about, because there's young explosive stuff with DeAnthony Thomas, and there's the veteran guy who can run sharp routes every time with Jason Avant. But man, the rest of that, there are a lot of question marks. I should say it that way. Jeremy Macklin is pretty much an exclamation point. Across the board, everywhere else, it's a lot of question marks still. Bringing in a veteran guy who has the speed still, like James Jones, I'd be totally in favor of. But at this point, since nothing has happened since the draft, his name hasn't really come up since then for the Chiefs, I guess it's just not going to happen. The last thing I want to talk about here today is an article that I had taken note of and then sort of had slid under my radar, and then David M. Whited on Twitter tweeted at me, at JB Briscoe, if you want to tweet me any articles, suggestions, ideas for the show, comments, anything at all. He tweeted at me and asked if I would be addressing the article over on Arrowhead Pride that talks about the best receiver, running back, tight end trios in the NFL. So now I am. Arrowhead Pride, they do us all a favor. They get down to the top 5 trios. Again, running back, tight end, wide receiver. They come up with the top 5 being the Bears, Cowboys, Chiefs, Steelers, and Seahawks. And they rank those 5. So let's look at those. Number 5, they put the Chicago Bears there. I think Matt Forte gets underrated in a lot of ways. They put Kevin White ahead of Alshon Jeffrey as their best receiver, which I think is way off base. And then Martellus Bennett is a very good tight end. But Bennett is very good. I think Jeffrey is exceptional. I think Forte is exceptional. But putting them at 5 is about fine for me. Then the Seattle Seahawks, it's Marshawn Lynch and Jimmy Graham at running back and tight end. Possibly, I would say, a top 5 running back and the second best tight end in the league, although Graham battled some injuries last year. But then they get cut down because their receiver is Doug Baldwin, and he's the worst receiver on this top 5 list, so I think that's fair. Although I would have them ahead of number 3 by a little bit, the Dallas Cowboys. In fact, I might be able to argue that the Cowboys should be 5th out of those 5. I digress. Julius Randle is their running back, which is a very large question mark. Jason Witten is their tight end, who is exceptional throughout his career, but currently certainly on the downside of his career. And then Dez Bryant, who is a head case and is extremely talented. Also, contract issues with him. We don't know exactly what his situation is going to look like. So we're talking about taking 3 players and like starting a team with those 3. I would have the Cowboys, I believe, probably 5th on that list. If you're just saying for this season as it's going to be, I would think I would say 4th, but 3rd is okay. And then it takes it down to the Steelers and the Chiefs as the 2 best trios here. And I think I'm probably going to have to disagree with the article by just a smidge. I just said that Chiefs fans underrate Jamaal Charles, and the NFL in general does. Charles and Le'Veon Bell, as traditional running backs, Le'Veon Bell gets the slight step up. As a guy who can really be out of the backfield constantly, Charles gets the edge. Overall, it's really a push. Maybe with the slightest advantage. I can't even put a slightest advantage. I think that's an unbelievably close total tie. Then with Travis Kelce and Heath Miller, Miller has a track record. He doesn't have the fumbling issues that Travis Kelce's had. But Kelce's potential is enormous. If I was even taking one of them just for next season, I would take Travis Kelce. I think he gets an advantage there. And then Jeremy Maclin versus Antonio Brown. I believe in Jeremy Maclin. Again, I think he's a top 10 to 15 receiver. But I think Antonio Brown's the best receiver in football. I would say the Steelers have the best running back, tight end, wide receiver trio in the NFL, with the Chiefs being second. And I have absolutely no problem at all with the Chiefs, Kelce, with Charles Kelce and Maclin having the Chiefs at number two on this list. It's a very talented group. I think it's a very interesting thought. I'd love to hear all of your guys' thoughts on, or even rankings on, those top five. Don't try to do all 32, please. But yeah, I lean to the Steelers because I think I would take Brown by more over Maclin than I would take Kelce over Heath Miller, and I think Bell and Charles are just neck and neck. But let me know what you think. I'd love to hear your opinions, as always, either here in the comments on Arrowhead Addict, or you can tweet me at JB Briscoe and let me know there. But if you want to have a conversation, let's do it in this comment section. That's what it's good for. So that's going to do it for a very long episode of Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I thought this show would probably be one of the shorter ones. I wasn't sure what we were going to talk about, but then the internet had a lot of opinions on the Chiefs this week, which I really appreciated, so it helped me get to share mine, and now I want to hear yours. Again, you can tweet them to me at JB Briscoe. Any questions, comments, ideas for the show, I want to hear about them, and I always really appreciate those. King, what you like, what you didn't like, really anything in general that you'd like to say about this show. But for talking to other Chiefs fans, these comments here on Arrowhead Addict are a great forum. I love to be able to see and then occasionally chime in on whatever conversations you're having, what subjects you guys want to talk about, whatever's on your mind currently, what you feel good about, what you do feel not so good about for the Chiefs going forward. Talk about the Broncos. You can talk about what you're going to have for dinner. If you want to talk about watching Chopped on TV, I'll get in the comments and talk that with you. As always, thanks for listening, thanks for your input, and thanks for making talking to the Chiefs in the offseason still a fun thing to do. Bye, Jeremy Maclin's dog.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass? Bass.